Musicpreneur.com.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Lies can prevail against much in this world, but never against art.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
This is what I was put on the earth to do, and I'm not going to sit around and wait for some politician to give the green light.
You musicians, you're too musical.
You just don't know what's going to happen if you have an attitude of, I'm going to just work with the conditions that I'm given.
You're not doing it for the money. You're doing it for what the money says. And it says what it says to any player that makes big money, that they're worth it.
There's so much competition. Why should I start it? Man, if you take that mentality, you might as well just say, well, there's 8 billion people in the world. Why should you have your own child?
You dance around too much. You talk too much. You're not concentrated enough. Lots of work can be done.
People not being reliant on an employer, they're going to say, if it is to be, it's up to me.
To assist in your journey of making money making music, the Musicpreneur.com podcast starts now. Here's your host, James Newcomb.
Well, hey, everybody. Really excited to be back on Musicpreneur with James Newcomb and Jim Lambie, myself, Jim Lambie, co-hosting with James Newcomb. We were talking last time with one of my favorite podcasters of all time, Jason Heath.
Yay!
And oh my gosh, he's here right now.
Jason Heath.
Thanks for coming, Jason.
Hey, you bet. I was just wrapping up the day about 24 hours ago, and I get a text from James saying, hey, you want to do a podcast? And I'm always down. So yeah, good to see both of you.
Yeah.
And I was just saying, before we hit record, the last time I saw both of you was over FaceTime, and I was coming back from Trader Joe's. And I just came back from Trader Joe's right now. So there's some sort of weird association between you guys and
Trader
my
Joe's
local Trader
and talking
Joe's.
To James and Jim at Virginia
know.
Beach.
Yeah, now it'll be forever associated with us.
Yeah, Trader Joe's. Yeah. All right, so Jim, I want to get your feedback. What was it like being on the other end of the mic? Not just like, I don't think you've ever even been on a podcast before, have you?
Mm-mm,
okay.
Nope.
So not only were you not, you don't have the experience of being on a podcast, but this is like your very first podcasting experience, and you were sort of brought into the fold as a quote, co-host.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the experience. What was it like?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that, James, you have a good way of making people feel comfortable. So I felt very comfortable, mm-hmm. and I was surprised, given the fact, and with the recorder going, that maybe I'd get nervous or something, but I was very surprised how fun and easygoing the experience was. So, and I think that's what kind of makes this an attractive format.
Yes.
Because we're hearing people be more down to earth, less on the spot, like perhaps maybe a formal broadcasting experience.
So. Yeah. You get someone on a podcast, like let's say you have an A-list celebrity or something. And when you get them on a podcast, you're like, okay, what's this person really like? You know, because they're like this on television, but I want to hear what this person is like in real life when the cameras aren't rolling. And you kind of get that experience with a podcast. And like you said, that's what makes it so attractive, because you just have that license to just let your hair down maybe a little bit, and mm-hmm. you don't have that tension of we got to perform and we just, you know, you got our makeup and our hair done just the right way. And that's the appeal of podcasts to a lot of people.
Mm.
It's just how real it can be. And we all know how real bassists can be. So that's why Jason's podcast is so popular.
That might be a reason. I have no idea why it's popular. It's just a thing I've been doing for so long that it's just like part of my life.
You had like a million downloads per year last we spoke. Is that how, I mean, not to get too personal, but how's your podcast going?
Yeah, it goes up and down, but it's been, or I've had millions at this point. And it was like a slow, well, I did it for a few years and then I neglected it for 5 years, didn't even do anything.
Yeah, right.
And then I rebooted it and it started to grow. And yeah, it goes up and down, but it's into the millions. I try not to look at the numbers too much, because if I have a problem if I start doing that a lot. I start having a metric in mind, and I think that does nothing but mess with my mind.
Right.
So I try to be good, but I do check in every once in a while and see what's popular and what's not, and it's never what I think. Everything that I think is going to be well received is not as well received as I expected, and vice versa.
What's your biggest surprise as far as like a episode that you didn't think was all that great, but then it turned out to be really, really popular? Besides some, James Newton,
yes,
obviously.
I have not checked it recently on yours, but I've had some fairly rank amateur bassists on, and those have been surprisingly popular. Maybe not surprisingly, because I've sort of realized that a lot of adult amateurs listen to the podcast, but I've had a few people that are really have not much of a, they don't have a profile in the bass world. This is like the first thing they've done in public. Mm-hmm. I haven't done a lot of those, but I've done a few of those, and those have been popular. The things that I put the most work into, which generally every podcast is about the same amount of work, but I have done some that are more intricate. Those never do as well as I expect given the amount of work I put in. Right. And it's mainly just because I've been thinking about it for so long.
Yeah.
So it's just this thing that slowly grows, and every it's like a drop in the lake, you know, drop in a pond every time. It just sends out these ripples. And so I'm not expecting it to really do anything, but if I just keep putting one foot forward, it just keeps growing.
Yeah, there have been a few times where I just like put way too many hours into producing one episode, and I was like, I'm really into this, and it was well received, but I think the return on investment wasn't quite.
Sure.
I think it was. I'm not going to say it wasn't worth the time, but I don't think it was worth the time that I put
in. Well, I like the flexibility of the medium, and I know James has done everything from like jumping jacks with soundtracks in the background to more traditional interviews to in-person stuff, and I just love the flexibility. Like some of my favorite memories, this 25 luthier roundtable that I did in Oberlin, Ohio.
Wow.
Which was like, could have been total chaos. We just had three Shure SM58s, and we're just like throwing them across the table at everybody to talk. So it was an editing job, but it came together magnificently, to live events, to doing stuff at conferences, to what we're doing here. And I had a co-host for a long time too. I had a former, still colleague of mine, but we did maybe 30-35 episodes together. So it's interesting. You can do it with a co-host, you can do it alone, you can do a solo show, you can talk to 25 people, you can do a live event, you can do a call-in show and just mix up things that people call in on your Google Voice number. There's a lot you can do.
I think people, when you have such a niche show like the bass, or I have one for trumpet players, it's people just like the community. You want something that you can relate to, and that's the appeal that I've found is, like you said, the guys that you brought on, really low profile, nobody's heard of them, but that's the type of thing that someone who's low profile can relate to. Hey, this is someone who's in the trenches doing, kind of going through the same things that I'm going through, and to your surprise, it was popular.
Well, that's some of those interesting content, and especially if you think of this as like a documentary medium. Like, think about any documentary you might watch. It's not usually a whole bunch of famous people. Sometimes, but a lot of time it's people you haven't run into. And James, I remember like 4 years ago or something, you did an episode, I believe, on Trumpet Dynamics, or maybe it was Musicpreneur. I can't remember exactly, but it was with a trumpet player in Africa. And I believe it was Africa. I don't, but it was definitely well outside of the United States. And I don't remember how you connected or somehow, but you were just talking about what life was like for him there and what they needed in his country. I thought, how interesting that it was, like somebody that, I don't know how you got connected, but it was incredible just hearing these two people, the Venn diagrams of your life probably barely overlap,
right?
But you were still able to talk about trumpet and talk about what life was like, and it's
really
cool.
Doing that. Yeah, I think it was just, that was during the days when I was really active on Facebook, and I think I just it just seemed like a good idea at the time to talk to a trumpet player in Africa, and it definitely gives you a different perspective on things, because they're just happy to have an instrument. You know, they could have a beat up old Bundy trumpet that a player here in the U.S. would just, you know, they're not gonna give it the time of day, but over there it's just an absolute blessing from heaven that they have an actual trumpet that doesn't have holes in it. Mm. So it's a totally different world. And yes, you're right. I do remember doing that. And I should probably do more of that, because that's just makes it things more... I just have... Like, I keep going back to that community, because that's just what we crave. We're wired that way.
One of the things that attracted me to your podcast, Jason, for a long time was I would never know what you were going to bring up in terms of things that were offshoots of my interest. I'm not an orchestral bass player per se, but I'm interested in that craft. I'm also interested in the mindset that gets good at something like that. And you talk to a wide variety of, like you, I think you were just alluding to, is the notoriety of some people. They don't have any, but they're successful at it. And mm-hmm. I get curious about that. Who are these people? And then I look them up as an offshoot of hearing them on your podcast. And not just the people, but programs too. And mm-hmm. so I'm impressed with how I take a podcast like yours, and then that puts me on a little bit of a path or rabbit hole of discovery. And that just I find that enriching. You know, it Bass Player Magazine and these great is a great publication, was for a long time for me when I was up and coming. But then you started seeing the same faces recycling on the front page all the time, on the cover. And I was more curious about the people that are doing this for a living that maybe aren't so famous. And they have some really, really powerful insights. And you had a couple of people on your podcast recently that I just resonated with. I didn't know who they were, but immediately they started talking about things and your conversation resonated with me and got me thinking about a lot of stuff. So it's really interesting to see where it goes when I put on a podcast and what books I'm going to start listening or reading as an influence from that, or another podcast I might check out, or music or websites, things like that. So it's an opportunity to take the passion you have for something and then just share it in your curiosity leads to other people having some wonderful discoveries.
Well, I appreciate you getting that out of my podcast. I know that I get that out of so many podcasts I listen to. I try to make sure that I try to start with podcasts first thing in the day, because I feel like that's a better use of my time than tuning into the news, which is generally not a great way to start the day for me, especially in late 2020. So I try to find something that's a little more evergreen and that I can take something from. And yeah, it's funny. Podcasting is, I think of it as, this might be a bad way to think of it, but I think of it, the stakes as being very low with a podcast. Like, there's no real production cost besides my time and their time. What's the worst thing that could happen? Someone's going to be bored, right? If someone goes off the deep end, I'll just not publish it, which has never happened in almost 800 episodes. But it's a good self-improvement exercise, which I've said far too many times, but I think it is. And it's just one of those things, like, I love going in with no agenda. Like, the three of us, if we were just hanging out in Virginia Beach, which someday hopefully we'll be able to do in person soon, we wouldn't have planned out an agenda for our hang, I don't think.
No, no, no.
not my friends, right. Anyway. You know, you get together and you hang out and you talk about whatever. You don't have, and so I've always resisted. Well, no, that's not true. As I matured a little bit as a podcaster, I resisted having any format. And I just, because I wouldn't have a format for a conversation. It's not something scripted, or I don't want it to be scripted. And so I've resisted bonus questions. Just like, we'll probably talk about what you do or what you did that just came out, but we'll just see where it goes. And we might not talk about it at all. We might talk about your child or your life or something amazing that happened to you or something you've been struggling with.
So you're saying that you just free form and you more or less resist having a format, or?
Yeah, I mean, I do a bunch of research, like whoever I'm talking to, because I just want to, as a citizen of the world, I would feel weird just like walking in, not having listened to or read or listened. So, but I try to resist. If someone asks me directly, hey, what do you want to talk about? I'll say, hey, here's some things we could talk about. But I think that can be a good thing to do, to put someone's mind at ease, mm-hmm. particularly if they're not a public figure, like some of these people I talk to. But you wouldn't do that in real life. I just try to keep it as, you know, I try to resist that sort of talk show rehearsal kind of thing that, right. You know, that people have done, like, oh, we're going to talk about this, and then you'll tell this joke, and it'll be great, and it'll be 7 minutes, and then we do this, and then we're out. You know, I think part of what I like about podcasting, especially the podcasts I tend to listen to, is that there's none of that. It's just a conversation, and you're a fly on the wall.
Yeah. You know, my attitude on that has changed a little bit over the years. And something that I think it was Igor Stravinsky. He's like one of those avant-garde, real, especially in his time, really off the wall type of compositions. And And this quote, when I read it, that it was from him, it really surprised me. And in essence, it's not verbatim, but he said those parameters or those the guidelines, like you establish those, and then once you have that, then you can be really creative. And what he's talking about is like the time signature, the dynamics, et cetera, et cetera. And at the time, I was very surprised to see that from Stravinsky, because his compositions are known for being really, you know, very, very, very unique, we should say. Mm-hmm. But I've kept that kind of in my back pocket over the years. And I get what you're saying, but I also find that when you know what the boundaries are and when you know what the parameters are, then you can really let the creation fly. The creativity can really fly once you understand those parameters.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, for me, everything. So I might not believe a word I'm saying in 6 months. Who knows? As things change, I have done. It's funny because I have done a few episodes. It all depends on who I'm connecting with. You know, I've done one recently that was actually fairly scripted out because he really wanted to deliver this message. Okay. I'm open to whatever. And I've done that a couple times. I've had one guest who I won't name because I don't want to embarrass him, but we literally did, I think it was at least three interviews because he wasn't happy with the first two. And he's prominent. Yeah. Like go, you know, he's not going to be a frequent guest because right. That was a lot of work. But it's funny because I haven't listened, you know, I'm always looking ahead. I haven't looked back at that project, but I'll bet if I dug out that first one, I'll bet the vibe was best on that first one. You know, because it was all planned by the time I got to the third one, because I knew what he didn't like. And that's cool. I'm sure that a lot of people get a lot out of it. And maybe it was a better product than in the end with all that. And I get, especially people in, well, musicians in general, but certainly a lot of classical musicians, I know that audition perfectionism that they have, that's like a very real manifestation.
Musicpreneur.com.
Well, I feel like Jason and I are just, as we are prone to do, we just get off on talking about podcasting. But I don't want to leave Jim here because he's still new to the game, and he doesn't have his horror stories yet, or his what do they call them, fishing tales or whatever? What do they call them? Like the fishing stories? His podcasting fishing stories. He doesn't have any yet, so. So, but there's something that's been kind of on my mind since Jim and I spoke last week. And I think we mentioned it at the very end of the podcast that we did. But it's this topic of, I guess I've heard it saying, monetize your haters. And what it means is that there's going to be people who don't like you. It's not that they don't like you personally, but they don't like something that you said, or they don't like a particular position that you have on this or that. I mean, Jason, you can probably say that you have your share of people, as hard as this is to believe, that Jason is the nicest guy in the world. I would bet that there are some people who just, he rubs them the wrong way for whatever reason. And we all have that. This is something that I've just been thinking about, and I wanted the three of us to talk about, is what do you do when you're in a situation where, what in the world is going on? Why is this person going on the attack? What did I say? How did I offend this person? And I just want to, maybe if we can just start with you, Jason, I just want to see, do you have any stories like that? What was your reaction to it?
Sure, that happens. it's funny because it's actually happened less in the last 5 years than it did 13 years when I was starting out. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit less confident, or quite a bit less confident in what I was doing. And I was getting more pushback. So things I keep in mind. YouTube is the vortex of terrible comments, and I have a lot of great interactions on YouTube, but any crappy comment, over 50% of all hates, maybe the wrong word, but shade or whatever directed my way is from YouTube. And I get very little of that these days, but I've gotten plenty. And I just can't, you know, all I can control is what I do. And if I show up and have integrity and try to be a good person and try to pursue things that are interesting to me and serve people that are interested in following what I do. And I just, I trying to please everybody is a fool's errand. And I have the worst kind of that kind of feedback is, you know what? I used to be into what you do, but you're just not as good as you used to be. And I have gotten a few of those. That is the worst. That's where the knife goes in and they twist it, because it's like, I was a fan, but now I'm not so much. And that really disappointed. I've had that a couple of times, and those hurt. And I've had those from people that I've had positive interactions with before. So the ones that hurt are the ones where you have a bit of a relationship. Mm. But I try, no matter what, you know, anything crappy like that, first of all, I try my best to post and ghost and choose when I interact, because, you know, if I open up my email is like this Pandora's box of the world trying to give me to-do list items. And that's right. Where negative stuff will come in too. And very rarely. But that's the one I would take a little more seriously, because they took the trouble to hunt down my email address. And so I've had some of that. So I try to save those moments, those, you know, I don't know what you call that moment, but I try to save those for moments when I'm not trying to be creative, because that'll just like ruin my day. And the, you know, the worst thing anybody's ever said to me, the worst that's happened is I feel bad for a day, and then I feel better. And then I think, I don't care about that person. So yeah, it was worse in the mid-2000s. I had a couple of death threat sort of things come through.
How could you possibly have a death threat?
Oh, it wasn't directed at me. Well, it was directed at me, but I was featuring somebody from an Israeli bassist, and I started to get all this crazy anti-Semitic stuff coming in. Goodness. And my wife asked, is our home address posted anywhere? And then I had a lot of like just people trying to like, because I was writing, like these days I just do like base community stuff. I think that's a lot harder to hate on, but I was writing a lot more critically about the music business in general about 13, 14 years ago. And I remember some people in orchestra management writing angry things to me. And I just, at a certain point, it's like, that's on you if you're going to have that reaction. So it's a tough thing though. I mean, I if it's on YouTube, I usually take it the least seriously. If it's someone on Facebook I don't know, I try to stay off Facebook as much as possible.
Yeah.
And if it's email, that tends to be a little more. And if it's somebody that I've had an interaction with in the past, I try to, you know, absorb what I can. But and I don't have the level of prominence of someone who's like actually famous. I'm sure that they have filters and stuff. Like I'm not big enough. I'm small enough that I feel like I have to answer people who get in touch with me. I can't just like not answer my email. So, but that's so rare. It occupies more space in my brain than it should, given how rare it is. And I think that's pretty normal for people.
That's interesting to hear your response to that question, because I think I know for myself in the past, the struggle with putting yourself out there is the risk of it not being liked, or the risk of wanting to be liked too much, or just putting that pressure, just to your point where you were talking about your podcast guest wanting to do three tries to a podcast. It because of the specific messaging, I guess I can understand that, but that level of self-critical mindset that kind of, for a lot of people, trips them up to the point where they just won't do something. They've got a lot of great ideas and won't do it. And what I love to hear is when somebody has an idea and then they follow it through and they actually see it through, and for how awesome or unawesome it may be, it's done and complete, and they can move on. They've got that idea out. And to hear how it seems like you have a hierarchy of understanding what gets more attention than others. That sounds like a real healthy approach. You know, I mean,
I don't always follow my own advice. I mean, you'll catch me opening up my email or getting mad at 1 a.m. at a Facebook comment or something like that. But I try to follow my rules. And you know, that just getting stuff out the door, shipping your creative work, that's like, I am generally not a fan of my own work. You know, I see all the flaws, but I also see myself getting better. So I just think of everything that I can get out there as an opportunity to get better somehow. Get better at podcasting, get better at, I'm on this video kick now, so trying to get better at that. And the only way I can get better is to put it out there in public. It's not going to get better sitting on my hard drive, that's for sure. Right. And you know what? Actually, you know what helped a lot with that dealing with negative criticism? 7 years of being a public school orchestra director.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Because those 200 kids, they're not necessarily buying what you're selling at all. And you've got a lot of, they'd get, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm getting a 4 or 5 for most of the things I do, maybe a 6 on a good day. So I think that that probably helped a bit too. Just having a fan, a group of people that are, even on your best day, quite skeptical, and then there would always be that one violinist all year, or maybe all 4 years, just glaring at you. And I had to learn, just don't look at that kid. I remember, it's like maybe not the healthiest advice, but I was like, if I look at that kid, I'm going to have a bad day. I just don't look at that kid. No problem. He's not going to like anything I do. That's okay. We will exist in this same room, and I will be civil, and he may be civil. And so some of those, and I'm not a parent, so I'm sure you learn those lessons as a parent, I think that toughened me up a little.
That's good. I love that you said you have rules, but you don't always follow them. But the rules are what keep you on track. They help you pick up back to where you know you wanted to go. And I'll imagine that every once in a while, you did look at that student and go, oh yeah, I remember. Don't look at that student.
Oh yeah, I had a couple moments that were kind of rough, but
yeah, I just wonder if they're better with me now. Oh no, they're not. and same thing with you know, some of these not so nice feedback that can come up. People are less tend to be less filtered, I suppose, with social media, but to weigh it all out in the end, that there is so many people that enjoy it, and maybe they don't say anything. Maybe they don't press that like button, or maybe they don't make that comment. But ultimately, it's just a commitment to just following through with this passion and completing something that was an idea that went from nothing to something, and then it's done. And then you move on to the next thing, and each thing getting better. Or maybe some backtracking. Maybe some things aren't as good as before. I don't know. It's just the process. And the process... going through it, I like the idea of, and I think I've heard this somewhere before, I just like the idea of having rules for yourself. So when we tend to get derailed, it gives us a guidepost to get back on track so we don't derail completely. And like you say, maybe it rents space in your mind for a day versus a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
That's good.
For sure.
I like that.
Something that I've noticed in like online entrepreneurs or podcasters or whatever, they almost take some sort of criticism as a badge of honor. And I've noticed that they, like, even the slightest little slight on their character or anything, they put a magnifying glass on it. And I don't know if you guys have noticed this or not, but it's like, oh man, this so and so said my dog was ugly. I've got a hater, and it's like they're proud of themselves because, man, I've got a hater, and it's just like they're just so proud of it. It's like my 6-year-old son bringing home a frog from the river, you know. And I've noticed that some of them are kind of take the opposite, kind of an unhealthy mindset in and of itself because. Well, who cares? You know, don't make it more than it is. It's not anything to be proud of.
Yeah, I think that can be a healthy way to handle it for sure. And you know, if you just think about if how often have I had genuinely unpleasant encounters in actual real life? If I was talking to a human being in front of them, you just the anonymity or relative anonymity of the online, of typing words, which is just a weird thing to be doing anyway. If you think about the way that we're, you know, wired to communicate, I think you just gotta take things with a big yes. grain of salt, you know, and people can really, people can reach out and mess with you in a way, if you allow them to, in a way that's very, very confusing to the way we're wired, I think, you know. And even just if you think about let's just take Instagram as a good medium. Like, when in human history were you looking at a photo of a cathedral, a video of a dog, four online ads, you know, a mess. It's a totally confusing, way yeah. to exist in the world or absorb information.
It's very unnatural in many ways.
Right. Well, that's one of the things I love about a podcast, because this is very close to what we've been doing since we've been human, right? Sitting down, no phone. We're not yes. like checking our phones constantly. We're not like taking selfies of each other right now. At least I'm not, and I can tell you're not. We're just talking like normal people. And yeah. and that's something my parents did, my grandparents, great-grandparents go back, you know, in time. So this is a very, though we're existing in this online world, this is something that I think really speaks to the way we're wired.
Yeah. Mm. It's kind of like I saw something on Facebook, but there it is. But I saw, it was like something along the lines of, eat organic, or as your grandparents used to call it, food, you know, because there was no pesticides back, you know, whenever 100 years ago.
Right.
So now
right.
it's just, interesting. All right, so Jim, give us yep. this is your shining moment. This is your first podcasting fishing story. Tell us a time where, for whatever reason, somebody just, you're like, what's going on? Why is this person hating on me? What did I do to make this person so upset?
Oh well, this is a couple of things that come to mind, and I have to say, I think, to Jason's point, not to say that I've done it all well, but when I've been successful in those moments, it had to do with something like having those rules for myself to not lose dignity in a situation, meaning just being true to myself. And in this situation, I just didn't know that there was... I heard a saying from a writer I saw give a presentation here in Virginia Beach one time, Bob Goff, and he has a book called Love Does. And he had an expression that I have really taken on now. What is the least creepy explanation for what just happened? Right? So you see something odd, or somebody's giving you a weird look, or someone's saying something. It's like, there might be a story behind this that's way less creepy than it's appearing to me right now. And I find that, just if I can remember that, it helps me to take a step back and just take a deep breath and go, okay, this may not be what I think it is. Generally, it ends up being a much better interaction in the end, because I just overrode that wanting to react kind of thing. And so, least creepy explanation, it's my wife and I both share that rule, if you will. It's worked out really well for a lot of things.
I don't follow. The least creepy explanation, like if somebody does something, like what in the world are they doing? Or can you give us an example?
A common thing that we all struggle with is road rage.
Okay,
you know, somebody cutting you off.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, I have driven only to find out somebody was angry with me, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with them? And as I think about it, it's like, oh, you know what? I might have not seen them and inadvertently gotten their way. And if I look at the person that's cutting me off, maybe they didn't see me, or maybe something's going on it's less than this aggressive driving. Maybe something's going on. They got to get to somebody sick at home or something. Does that make sense? You know, least creepy, yeah. meaning they're yeah. not being personal, you know, personally or personalizing mm-hmm. some sort of anger towards you.
Yeah, a bit of empathy.
Yeah, it's empathy. Yeah. Or perhaps, yeah. you know, it's somebody who looks different than you would expect, and you find out they're just kind of eccentric people, and you find out they're really actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. People are thinking about you way less than you think they are. You know, it's so easy to personalize everything you see in the world, right? Whether it's, you know, road rage is a great example. But yeah, have empathy is the, yeah, that's a good word.
Speaking
for
of
it.
Road rage, I have to make a confession here. I was driving today from, I took my son to, we just had an errand to run. We came back and somebody was in the traffic circle and they were just going way too slow. And I got a little, I had a moment where I got a little frustrated. I was like, ah, come on. Just, I didn't honk. I wasn't angry or anything. It was just like, ugh. And then I look right back and my 6-year old boy is just looking at me like, looking at me like, are you okay, Dad?
And it's not surprising. I mean, think about what you're actually doing when you're driving. Now, I don't know how far we're going to go down this tangent, but talk about something that is not wired into the human, you know, the speed of what's happening and the potential danger at every moment that really is happening. It's one thing to be scrolling on Instagram, but you're probably not going to, you know, unless you're driving while you're doing it, you're probably not going to like physically injure yourself. But that's true. We're just, this is my take, or I probably lifted this from somebody, but part of, I think, what road rage is just the fact that the stakes are high in a way that we aren't maybe biologically adapted to yet, You know, since we've only had cars for a little over a century.
That is interesting. Yeah, You're absolutely right.
It's hard to think about that when someone's slow in the traffic circle, of course, but, you know, that might, there's probably something to that. You know, like when you get in an accident, someone jumps out, or you've seen this happen, and they're so on edge, right?
Yeah.
It's just the stakes, I think, of it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going on in someone's life. And truth be told, there was, you know, I was thinking about something that was stressing me out, and I wasn't upset at the person going too slow on the traffic circle. It was just, it's the one thing that makes, kind of makes things boil over a little bit.
Musicpreneur.com.
This is my opportunity because this is what's been on my mind for the last week. So finally, I get my chance to tell my podcasting fish story. Now, like Jason has mentioned, I have a show called Trumpet Dynamics. It's recently resurrected. And I had a really negative experience with it in, I think it was early 2018. Looking back on it, there was some things from this set of circumstances that, looking back, had I done things a little differently, it would have had a different outcome. Basically, what happened is I stirred up a little bit of controversy within the trumpet community. And rather than remaining aloof to the things that were said about me and to me, I got myself emotionally involved in it. Like I took things personally. Things were said to me that, well, they had no business being said to me, but of course they're on Facebook. But my big mistake with it was just taking things like as if they were directed to me personally. And I didn't say, okay, this person is, who is this person? I don't know this person. What's going on in their life right now? Why are they saying this? And I because I took it personally and I tried to fight back and I tried to go on the offensive and I really shot myself in the foot. And what could have been an opportunity to really build my audience because controversy is great for building an audience if you do it correctly. Well, I didn't do it correctly, unfortunately. Mm. And it could have been a great opportunity to build my audience and also open up a discussion that is quite frankly needs to be said. It had to do with women playing trumpet and can they play it as well? And because it's kind of a big thing, and Trump women have dealt with a lot of discrimination over the years because it's been a very male dominated field. Probably until the time that I was in high school, I think it's balanced out a little bit more in the last couple of decades. But man, it was a thing that had to be said. It was a conversation that should have been opened up, and maybe some bridges could have been built rather than burned. Mm. And unfortunately, my response was it hurt far more than any good that could have come from it. So I'm just telling the story because it's just so important, I think, when you're in those moments when you're in the heat of battle, and you're like you feel like you're just under attack. And it's the reason I phrased this question to Jason from the outset is you don't know what is going on in someone's life. You don't, if you've never met this person before and you're probably never going to meet them again, why does their feedback mean anything to you in the first place? Hmm. Why would you take it personally? Why would you think that they are attacking you? They're not. They're probably dealing with their own dysfunction in their own life to whatever degree. So all that to say is that the big lesson that I learned from that experience, and that if I were to go through something similar again, is, man, I would just stay completely detached emotionally from it. I would definitely not go on the attack, the offensive, try to respond. I would, if someone's an idiot, man, I'm just going to let them be an idiot. And if some good comes of it, such as that something that needs to be said is maybe riling someone up, well, it means it needs to be said. And I'm going to use my podcast or this little platform that I have, I'm going to use it to be that vehicle for having that conversation that needs to be had. In that case, it was women trumpet players. In the future, it could be something else. So I think that was just the big lesson learned from that experience. And hopefully, maybe someone listening to this can maybe take something away from it. And if they find themselves in that position, you know, just stay away from it. Don't get emotionally involved in it. Just let idiots be idiots. And then go in for the kill when the time is right with your offer for their email address.
Yeah, it's interesting, James, that when you share that, I started thinking about, as I've gotten older and I've gotten more seasoned with life, that it's more to do with the focus of where I want to go versus where I don't want to go. And the going, just being concentrating where I want to go tends to make, I would imagine you could call it becoming a magnet for the things you want. Mm-hmm. And when I've allowed myself to get distracted by some negative input, I've allowed myself to concentrate on the wrong thing. And that just comes from age and experience, I think. You hit your head on the wall a couple of times. Lord knows there's moments that people have seen me at not my best. And I hope, we would understand that we're not the same people anymore because of those experiences, and we get better. I know for as a musician, how many times have I tried something on stage or I've worked something up and it didn't work out the way I thought. And then all of that ends up being part of my getting better, right? So, yeah, to your point, though, I think that's an interesting – I bet there's more to that story that
– There is.
Yeah, that you learned – it just – I can hear there's a lot of wisdom through experience from that. That's good.
If I can just say one other thing is that be very careful with whom you do business. Like, of course, we have Jim here as a co-host, and certainly, definitely, absolutely not a knock on you. But back in this time, I brought on someone that was going to like handle the social media for the podcast, and he was a trumpet player, and he seemed really friendly, really outgoing. Just reached out, and I thought he was like had a podcast or something, and just the way he interacted was just really super friendly. And I said, well, if you want to help out with the podcast with some of the stuff, and we did it for about a month, and I didn't really vet him that well. But when all of this stuff came about with all of this controversy and all of the things being said, the guy completely threw me under the bus, went onto the biggest Facebook group for trumpet players and just said, James is a misogynist, he's a bigot, he's a loser, I can't believe that I partnered with this person, never do business with him. And it's like, my goodness, you treat your business partner this way just for your own benefit. And that's what really hurt, was someone that I had trusted just being so eager to throw me to the wolves, and my name and my character and my reputation, just so he could make himself look good. I was really frustrated.
You know, in this business, there's just risks that we're going to be taking. We just don't know, right?
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know. We you know, relationships are have an inherent risk in them, mm-hmm. And when they don't go well, it's hurtful and painful, except for sure. But it is also it's part of the risk of relationship. It's these things can happen. But again, you learn from them. You get a little bit more seasoned. Age, you know, you can see my gray hair. I always tell my students, I said, okay, right now I'm going to give you some wisdom from the gray hair. You know, like I'm just because I haven't always done it well and I've learned a lot of mistakes. And I want to share with you some of the things I've learned from my own mistakes. And I've had a student that came in one time and says, oh, I need some wisdom from the gray hair. Please help me. It's just, you know,
well, that's
just
effective teaching right there.
Right? Yeah, just telling them I've stepped in it more times than I'd like to admit, and I've made some mistakes, and and that is I can offer. I can't give them what's in my head, but I can offer them some thoughts of perspective, perhaps from a place of now. You know, just, you know, life can get hard, but but the more you grow from it, the more exciting. Now I'm done with that. I can move on to I can have bigger and better problems.
That's great.
You can get more gray hairs with more mistakes.
Yeah, James, I remember when all that was going down. I remember, I have a distinct memory of sitting on the train and listening to your podcast and thinking, oh, man, you know, I've never had anything like that happen, but I can only imagine how hard it must be to have, like, that sort of personal, attack.
Yeah. The big takeaway that I took away from that is my mistake was just taking it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting emotionally wrapped up in it. And in that way, I really shot myself in the foot and really missed a big opportunity to grow my audience.
I've had a couple extremely limited moments where battle could be waged in the last few years, mm-hmm. that I would have, you know, and about 5 years ago, I was moving out here, and I was thinking about projects I wanted to work on, and I had this crazy job. It's just absolutely it would make for what I think would be a very entertaining novel and scandalous about, like, our education system, and I thought about writing it, and some of my former colleagues said, please don't write the novel that I know you could write, and I just said to myself, I'm like, I can't focus on the negative for the extended period of time that would do. Like what's the ultimate point of this? Just reliving, like, past and, like, getting angry and stuff. And so I thought, yeah, I'm just going to talk to bass players. That's what I'm going to do. And for me, I can't. You've only got you got so much gas for every day. And if I'm going to burn 20% of that tank in a day, getting mm-hmm. getting angry or fighting or thinking about people that wronged me in the past or that sort of thing. And I've done some of that, you know, ever since I've been a public figure, especially earlier on. And I just want to take the positive I can from whatever situation and trying to get better at what I do and find things that fascinate me and people that I think are cool. And mm-hmm. that sounds Pollyanna, but I know I could go down kind of a dark road if I'm not careful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to stir the pot a little bit, but do it wisely. You don't want to be stupid about it. Cause controversy, it stimulates discussion. And oftentimes it's something that people are just, they've got some sort of bias that they want to hold on to, like it's for dear life. But having that conversation, if you wisely stir the pot a little bit, so, yeah.
Well, that begs a question for me. What do you mean by stir the pot? I mean, intentionally? Or you're having an opinion, and then you know it may be a strong opinion, but you're going to go ahead and just go for it. Is that?
Yeah, I think there's like, I have opinions that I know if I were to say on a podcast that thousands of people are listening to, it's going to stir the pot. But I feel like if I'm going to be me, like, this isn't like, this is Trumpet Dynamics with James Newcomb. This is not Trumpet Dynamics with Joe Schmo, who plays it in the big band in Atlanta. This is my show. And I'm like, I'm the host. And if I'm going to be me, I'm not going to intentionally just make people angry just for the sake of making them angry. That's not healthy at all. Mm. But there are times where there are going to be times where I'm going to say something that I know has to be said, and I would be doing myself a disservice to not say it. I'd be doing the community a disservice by not saying it, by not saying what I feel is my personal conviction. Mm. And when you say it in a way, it's like, I believe this, I strongly believe this, in my view, I interpret it this way. When you're tactful about it and you're not dogmatic about it, then you don't come across as preachy. And you, when people know that this is you, this is James's take on this, well, they're going to be more receptive to it. They may not like it, but they know that it's me expressing my view, not being preachy, saying this is the way you should view it. Mm. So it's a lot. I think a lot is how you phrase things is very important. Mm-hmm. And I've got a few gray hairs of my own from that.
Well, that's what I love about this long form medium, because you can really get to know somebody. And I wouldn't want you to not be. James, you've always struck me as someone who is a genuine person. I think you say what you feel and you say what you think. And I think that's part of why I've enjoyed following along with what you do. And I don't know, you get people in a long form discussion for an hour or two or three or how. However, you know, you really get to know a person that way. It's such the opposite of the mainstream media, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Where everybody's talking over each other, and you've got 2 minutes to get your point across, and you've rehearsed it, and you've got a team that's trying to feed you things that you know. It's a quite different thing. I think that's part of the appeal of it is. You should say what's on your mind. That's the point. Why are we sitting here? You know, I think that's part of the strength of what we're doing here.
True that.
Well, I heard you share a few opinions recently, Jason, that I found refreshing. Just that you just stated it very clearly that there was some inherent issues with the education system, with the model that it is now for preparing musicians to be in the professional world. Just not that they were strong opinions. They were meaning very outspoken. They were just, I could sense there was this desire for something to change that would equip students for more realistic approach to what's going to be available for them after they spent all that money on that education. And I found that refreshing to hear your opinions. And I thought, yeah, that resonates with me, and it made me feel good to say, oh yeah, you know there's certain aspects of this that's not always pleasant, but also there's to get to the place that we want to do this stuff that's pleasant, you know, and that journey of discussing it and everything is helpful for other people to kind of weigh out the things they may feel about it.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, that is a topic. I have been beating the drum on that topic for a long time. That's what kind of got my internet career, quote unquote, going back in the mid 2000s, is like writing about that. And I was getting out of adjunct teaching, and I thought, why don't I write exactly what I think about this dirty business? And right. And I think my opinions have evolved a lot over the years. And part of it was that I was feeling so dark maybe 13, 14 years ago about musician prospects. And at the same time, I was teaching these high school kids, many of whom have gone on to have professional music careers. So I'm totally confused at this point. And I mean, it's a nuanced discussion. But I think one of the nice things about someone in my position is I don't have a horse in that race, really. I am not employed by an academic institution. I can say what I think or what I bring on. I just think it's important. Not that anybody should be taking any advice from me on that whatsoever, but I think it's good to just say, hey, here's some things to think about. So that's sort of what I've been trying to do in terms of that.
Yeah, it's just things that you're sharing that give somebody something to think about. And like you say, don't take my advice, but these are from your perspective and from your experiences. And I find that to be valuable, especially when you're in this format of podcasting where we hear the various interactions of these opinions. And then we just, please, just form your own opinion at this point. Don't take my advice. You know, I have a, I had a unique career path, and some of the things that you shared, I decided not to spend the money on the music education, and I found an avenue through the military band program. And I just thought, I can learn to do this better if I can get my foot in the door and learn on the job and just keep doing it and kind of look at it as more of a musician's apprentice system where I get a trial by fire and I keep growing. And everywhere I've gone, I had sought out opportunities and teachers and whatnot. But to the point, though, not so much to tell my story, but just to say that hearing you tell some of these stories kind of validated, oh, yeah, that was a good choice. Now that I'm older and I've had, I don't have that college loan hanging over my head or whatever, and I've had some enriching experiences, to hear these opinions validates for me. Like, oh yeah, that's good. It makes me feel good about the career path I ended up kind of inadvertently choosing to stick with that worked out well for me. And that journey is, it's interesting when you hear other people, so many people talk about this certain journey of these higher level education places that are very expensive, very exclusive, very well known, but that's not accessible to everybody. And, you know, and you were talking about having lesser known musicians come on. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going to go with that, but I think it's really kind of cool part of the conversation in terms of these set in stone mindsets that people can get stuck in. I found myself stuck in getting in an unnecessary kind of depressive state at one time early in my career because I thought I was behind or not in the right place. But it turns out years later, no, it was a good place.
Musicpreneur.com.
Well, that's part of the great thing. I mean, we're all coming from different places, and you both have that military band background, which I have no experience in, but I know more about it than I did before I started doing the podcast, talking to Adam Booker and some other people that have gone through that. And it's amazing how many different paths there are through that, this whole mess. And yeah, that music schools thing, I have to stop tempting myself to go down that path. I just chase what I'm interested in at the moment. And there was this article that came out called An Impossible Choice about musicians going back to school during a COVID-19 crisis. And it reminded me how the system is just not set up with your interests at heart. You know, maybe we could pick any system, probably isn't, but you know, that education system. And so that's, again, it's something that I just got obsessed with. And I actually just an hour before we hopped on here, I put out a video. I'd synthesized all these conversations into more of a succinct thing. Though I think the conversations where you're talking for an hour with people from these different walks of life, there's a beauty to that. But there's also beauty to the 10-minute YouTube video that people can just sort of like absorb my findings.
I like the GoPro on your head with your practice. That was fun.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was something. I might come back to that. And I might buy the latest GoPro, which has a little more image stabilization to not give people too much vertigo. But yeah, that was an idea I got from this cook here, this wonderful chef, Kenji Lopez Alt, who has a food show where he just puts a GoPro on his head and cooks and talks about what he's doing. And I thought, what a cool idea to do for practicing. And so I did that for 16 weeks, and then I have enjoyed not wearing a GoPro on my head for an hour a week. And so the GoPro was on loan to one of my wife's colleagues, but when it comes back, it might make another appearance. But that, you know, it's fun to think about different ways to do the craft. One of the beautiful things about audio is the production level is just lower, and that's not to no slam on audio, but there's just less to think about. So it's flexible in a way that's maybe less complicated than video, but video, of course, is something that I'm enjoying digging into and trying things like the GoPro on the head.
Yeah, that's cool.
I like audio for the exact same reason you like video, because it's so flexible and there's so many things you can do with it. There's silences that you can put in. You can completely change the dynamic of a conversation by for example, taking out someone laughing, like laughing at a joke, completely change the dynamic of it. I just kind of like messing around with it.
I have some super cringy early episodes. I used this terrible piece of software called, I don't remember what it was called, but it was on my Acer laptop. Not that Acer matters. It was just in the mid-2000s, and it would get my guest and my voice out of sync, and it would bake it into the same track, and I would get ahead of the guest. So they'd be talking, and all of a sudden I'd start laughing like a maniac. And then they'd tell a joke, and it'd be dead silence. So I have some really, really and actually, I feel so bad. A woman emailed me from Germany this morning and said, "Oh, I'm loving your podcast. I'm going through every single episode, and I'm on 71. And I wanted to say, "No, skip ahead 400 episodes, please." But hey, if she's digging the archival stuff, that's great.
Yeah,
it's funny to see people when they first start, especially because you started in like 2008. Or was it 2005 or
2007? 2007. Yeah, January 1st, 2007.
And that's when podcasts were just starting. And not to disrespect you, but you were an amateur back then. And
my soundtrack was like an electric bass Apple Loops app, which is loop, which is great for like a double bass podcast.
But this is like people they have the computer and they have a microphone and they're making a podcast. And this is like this is the beginning of an era of modern media production, and you're right there in 2007.
Yeah, well, it's hilarious. Not that I go back and listen to my old episodes obsessively, I don't, but I do remember my first episode is me telling the world this is a podcast. My second episode was me describing the microphone I'm talking into. The third episode is me telling everybody about all the early 2007 bass auditions that were happening, which is real evergreen. And then I finally started doing guests by the fourth episode. But you know, whenever I interview a podcaster, which I've done enough to have a process, I listen to their latest podcast, then I go all the way back and listen to their first podcast.
Yes.
And nice. And it's fun to hear the inevitable evolution.
Yes, to like point A to point B and beyond is can be rather comical.
Yep.
And everybody has their starting point. Like my friend John Lee Dumas, who I'm a member of Podcasters Paradise and have been for years. And he started out, he was just as dull as just like chewing on sawdust listening to his show. But he's a rock star now, and everybody has their journey. Everybody has their starting point.
Yeah, that's a humbling thought, but you got to start somewhere. And I think that's the encouragement I would love for people to get from a discussion that talks about dealing with negative input or the possibility of it, is that you've just got to do it to get better, right?
And take the chance.
Yeah, ship your work. It's not, you're not going to get any better just leaving that on your hard drive. Just make a thing, show to the world, in the words of Seth Godin, who I admire, here I made this, and then make the next thing and just keep going.
Yep, that's a good one. That's an ideal that I think is a good one to keep in mind. I made it, and here it is. And then at that point, not worry about how it's received. Just keep going and building on it.
You know, this past week, I don't know if you guys have been getting my emails of the podcasting principles.
Yep.
Like, just this Monday, I was editing a podcast for one of my clients, and the guest was saying exactly what we're saying right now. So you just got to ship it, even if it's not perfect. Just go it. And it's just like hit me right between the eyes. I was like, man, I've just been sitting on this thing. I'm just going to get the autoresponder series on MailerLite. And I'm just going to do it. It's not perfect, but I'm just going to send it out.
That's good.
It feels so good to ship things. I have this whole system of moving things from the in-process folder to the published folder. And I move that, and I hear that little Apple sound of moving the files. And I'm like, nice. It's like such a relief to like... And I've been doing that for 13 years, I guess, with the podcast and longer with other things. But yeah, it's just moving, you know, moving through the projects, and the next project's going to hopefully take what I learned and just incrementally improve.
Mm. Well, having thought about this topic myself this week, it motivated me to...
Insult somebody?
No. Stop. No. I was going to say to ship something, like to put something out. And so I published a YouTube video today, and I have a very meager little YouTube channel. I think the highest view count I've ever had on a video was maybe 150. And I think that was all my cousins and family. And
well, but now you're here talking about it. I don't think I'm subscribed, but I will be after this. And so that's how it goes.
It was what's always stumped me is, oh, I got this idea, and I'd share it with my wife. I'm going to do this thing. And she says, you know, you tell me a lot of these ideas, but you haven't done it. I'm like, oh, ouch. Oh, yeah, that's right. And so I made a video at the beginning of the COVID breakdown. I thought I'd do a series, and then that was it, the one. And then I'm like, okay, so let's see. And then I thought, oh, I have this video footage from some of the things we do at my school. And I thought, hey, let's let people have a little peek in. And I had a piece that we did that was part of a bigger show. But I thought, okay, why don't we just get into a rhythm of doing this and like with the podcasting. And in the process of doing it, if we don't, then we don't get better at it. Just the idea. And I felt good. I put it all together, edit it, publish it. And to your what you said, yeah, it felt good. What happens with it after that? Whatever.
I mean, well, that's the challenge with video. Again, we have so many tangents we could go off on. But my general rule of thumb is, audio for me seems to take 10x what writing does. This is not a hard and fast rule. And then video takes 10x what audio does. And so when it's not a pandemic, I feel like I have zero time for video. So I'll get into video and do some, and then 7 months later, I'll be back. But at this current moment, we're recording this, I have lots of time. And so
why does audio take 10 times, like 10x the time of writing?
It probably doesn't, but for my process, just in terms of the research, if we're just talking about a podcast, I tend to do a lot of research. So I'm researching, talking to the person. I have to do an intro and outro. I put the ads in. I have a team I work with. It gets published, scheduled, the social media promotion. Writing has elements of that, but it's a much sleeker vehicle, whether it's an email sequence or a blog post or whatever. And again, these are rough metrics. And then video, it's like, let's just add a whole bunch of other layers to it.
Mm-hmm. That's good to think about.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to do a podcast right, you really have to, there's a lot that goes into it. And I've come across so many people over the years. It's like, I want to do a podcast because, you know, they hear some rock star who's got a podcast and then they get into two episodes. Wow, this is a lot of work. I don't know. May not have really taken into account how much work this would be.
My thing I tell a lot of people is like it's just a lot of little things. It's a whole bunch of little things. No one thing is that insurmountable. Gear is cheaper than what you're going to be investing in video. Especially if we're doing like what we're doing here. There's a production level that doesn't need to be as sophisticated, might be a word, or just whatever, as overproduced as maybe something that's going to perform on video. But it's just a lot of little steps. You got you need a title. Oh, you need a graphic. Oh, you should pick a way. Oh, you should probably promote it somehow. Maybe you want an intro. Maybe that intro's not so great. Maybe it's just a lot of little things. My list for the podcast, I work with some people on this, but my own personal list, and I've outsourced as much as I can. I still have 11 steps that Jason has to do before getting a podcast out the door. Just my steps, you know, and none of them are a big deal, but they're there.
Yeah. The lot of little things. Kind of death by a thousand razor cuts or something. All right. Well, we're getting we've been going over an hour now. And Jason, we have to bring our young grasshopper, Jim Lambie, up to speed here. Because he's brand new into podcasting. Of course, he's been listening to them for years, but now he's on the production end of one. And we have to help him. Because he's going to, before too long, he's going to be interviewing people, and he won't have the wise guidance of Shaman James guiding the way. He won't be able to rely on the wise guidance that he's been receiving thus far. So we have to, I was wondering maybe if you could give him some resources, like who are the top interviewers that you've learned from? That Jim could research and learn from himself.
If you can look up One of Tim Ferriss's early episodes in like maybe the 50s or 60s, he has an episode, I think it's called like How to Get, I can't remember, his titles back in that day were very convoluted. It's How to Get Good at Anything or Everything. But what it is it's his podcast process and how he thinks about interviewing and what he recommends is very specific. Remote podcasting is your friend. These days, I would much rather sit in person with somebody and chat with them. That's the way I prefer to do everything. But remote podcasting can be your friend early on because you can have your notes up on the screen and your Zoom call, Skype call up on the screen. And you can have, it's probably a good idea to write out some things you might want to talk about early on. And me, still to this day, I don't ever really write questions I'm going to ask, but I write a ton of stuff. I have links and photos and all the in these documents. And then these days I don't look at it at all, but for the first several hundred episodes, I always had that up on the screen when I was doing something remote. Mm. And that helped a lot. Advice I got from some broadcast, I don't remember if it was Dan Rather or some broadcaster that's known for his interviewing, is research like crazy and then just forget about it all when you're in the moment. Maybe don't forget about it all when you're starting out, but that's these days. It's like, you know, you practice your butt off to play whatever, and then you're not like, you know, then you just go out and play in the jazz context, especially, or improvised context. But yeah, I can tell you things not to do that I did. One is don't send your guest 30 questions for them to answer beforehand. I did that. Oh. Maybe say, hey, maybe we could talk about one or two topics.
Well, how about interviewers that you've learned from? Like,
oh, right.
Podcasters, talk show hosts, whatever.
Yeah, so Tim Ferriss, for sure, I think is a really interesting person to follow. I love James Altucher. I find his approach really interesting. Mm. Who have I really enjoyed? Joe Rogan is my model. In many ways, in terms of the looseness of the format and the really having no agenda and just talking to people. I think not that is something that's really, I think, doable when you're starting out, or maybe it's not doable unless you're Joe Rogan, but, Tim Ferriss. He's the person I think I've learned the most from. I think really just the meticulousness by which he preparation. Mm. I think is something that, not that you have to prepare like Tim, but I think the way that he has some interesting things in mind to dig into with somebody, and he does that whether it's Katie Couric or he's had so many famous people on. I mean, just it's the level of preparation that he does, I think, is incredible.
Mm. Yeah, cool. Good thoughts there. That is going to be helpful. Thank you for sharing that.
My go-tos are the old, not the newer late night talk shows, but older talk shows. Johnny Carson, I thought, was a really, really good interviewer. He could just improvise. I've learned by osmosis. It's just thinking on your feet, going off the cuff. David Letterman was pretty good. Dick Cavett was great.
Hmm. Yeah, Cavett was great. Yeah,
he was a wonderful interviewer. And he talk about having some controversy. He had some controversial people on his show. And he was very wise and adroit about it. Of course, there's great interviewers today, but I've learned so much from the 80s, the 70s. I'll just sit and watch Johnny Carson for hours on YouTube. Hmm. Just so good.
Let me throw out one more recommendation that's going to seem from left field, but it's somebody that I've actually, and she is a very different demographic than people were talking about. Her name's Sarah Deechy. She has a podcast called That Creative Life. Mm. She's maybe 26 or 27 years old. She's well known in the YouTube world. I think she's got a million followers or something. But that show is, she connects with like Peter McKinnon, this great photographer, all sorts of people whose names you're likely to have heard. And it's so cool to hear somebody who is in a totally different generation than me, but so smart and so just the way she approaches things. She's chatting with a lot of people that would never have come up on my radar otherwise. Mm-hmm. And her style, I think, is super interesting. So she's somebody that I listen to. I click play as soon as a new episode pops up.
Sarah Deechy?
Sarah Dietschy. Yep. D-I-E-T-S-C-H-Y. And okay. Really interesting person and career and very smart in terms of a business person, the way she's built her career and just the people she's interacting with. It's one of those things that I feel like I'm tapping into a whole world of people that she's like my conduit to a world of people I probably wouldn't have been introduced to otherwise. Mm. And just the level of what she's talking about, I think is incredible.
Cool. Sarah Dietschy and Is it That Creative Life?
That Creative Life. Yeah, nice. Just look up That Creative Life. It'll come up.
That's a great recommendation. I'm going to check her out.
And this is the kind of thing I love about listening to these podcasts. I mean, here, a new thing, and I didn't know about James Altucher until you guys were talking about him a couple of podcasts ago, and I looked him up, and I've been listening to him, and I love him. I've been listening, but that was a new name for me. I hadn't heard that before. So very helpful stuff. This is great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Altucher is good at taking controversial stuff and remaining emotionally aloof from it and just letting the stuff that comes his way just water off a duck's back. It just doesn't care.
Right. And experiment with the podcast format, and somebody who, even though he does dive into all sorts of controversial topics, and he's, Jerry Seinfeld wrote an op-ed ripping him up to shreds in the New York Times, which is like quite the thing. It's the only time Jerry Seinfeld's ever written an article is to like trash James Altucher, which is, a bad, weird badge of honor. But James is such a positive person and such an abundance mindset sort of person. And he's somebody who, if you're ever feeling down or you're ever feeling like you need a little bit of inspiration, just the velocity of that guy's brain, and again blowing the doors off the podcast format in a really interesting way, he's something special.
Yeah, he is. He's great. Well, everybody, this is James Newcomb, and I'm here with Jim Lambie and Jason Heath, the J trifecta here on the show. So thanks for listening.
For more podcasts and resources on making money making music, and to download the free MusicPreneur.com mobile app, head on over to MusicPreneur.com today. Thanks for listening.